when I came back, so-called stateside, and came back into civilian life, I had things that were just, I knew were a little odd. Like when I was driving down the road, if there was a piece of trash in the road, I couldn't drive over it. I had to drive around it, even if it meant I had to go in the opposite lane or drive off the side of the road or whatever. I would not drive over a piece of trash.
And
And I thought,
what was
that's
that
got to be
about?
strange. Potential IED that could blow your vehicle up. And I knew that just because they do that in Iraq doesn't mean it's done here. And I knew that it wasn't, but the emotion is so raw and real, you can't deny it.
Welcome to There Is Hope. Any advice or counsel given is provided for informational purposes only. Your host for There Is Hope, Richard Dover.
Well, welcome to There Is Hope Radio. This is your radio host, Richard Dover, and I'm doing another interview with my son, Joshua. Joshua, are you there?
Yes, I am.
We should let people know that I'm in Arkansas and Joshua is in Oregon, and so we're doing this interview over the phone. And what we're going to do, we're going to get to his motorcycle crash and the experiences in the hospital and just a lot of different things that has gone on in his life and what he's learned and a lot of the principles he's applying to make a difference in his life. But we thought it would be good. In our last couple of interviews, we talked about being Marines, and there's things he's learned in the Marines that are helpful for him in the midst of what he's going through in his rehabilitation from his motorcycle crash. And when we get more into his hospitalization and other stuff, we will be talking more of how there's principles he's learned in the military. But what we don't want to do today is cover the fact that he got out of the Marines. I don't know if he'll share this. I don't know. At some point out of the Marines, I realized he has PTSD. I don't think he realized that first. We're just going to talk about his own experience with PTSD, what it is, share some things that helps people understand. Maybe you have a loved one or a friend or somebody you know that is manifesting certain behavior and you wonder what's going on, and maybe something Joshua shares will give you more understanding and maybe be able to accept certain things that go on. So, Josh, are you ready to talk about your story?
Yes, I am.
And Josh and I have said, I think, in our very first interview that both of us want to be as vulnerable as we can, because we think if we're more vulnerable, that it can help others, because then they find out they're not alone. Sometimes when people aren't honest about their own situation, then others listen and they think, well, you just don't understand because you haven't gone through this or that. Well, I think that maybe we understand more than you think. But also the agreement is if I ask some questions, we don't prepare ahead of time for these interviews. So if I ask Josh some questions he feels uncomfortable with, he gets to say, no way, buddy, I'm not going down that road. And I don't know if he'll say it that way. We'll find out. It matters what the question is. We'll find out. So, Joshua, why don't you just say what PTSD is before we get into your own story, but just say what it is, and then we'll get into how you realized that you had it and kind of what brought you to that place.
Yeah, so, PTSD, your fine Google machine will tell you is post-traumatic stress disorder, and essentially, in a nutshell, essentially if you go through a traumatic experience, and that could be traumatic to you. Just because it's not traumatic to everybody doesn't mean it can't cause PTSD. So
yeah. This stuff right
this
there.
Yeah.
Because we did talk about
divorce is everything. I mean, it's everything.
Yeah. It's anything and everything. And that and I just the reason I want to emphasize that is because somebody thinks that you won't have it, you don't get it unless it's something that's absolutely horrific, like you saw five people get shot in front of you, and other than that, you wouldn't have it. And there's different, obviously, different level stages of it. But we're all different, and so something that I might be able to handle, Joshua and I may be able to handle, and the other way around. And so we want to really emphasize that to don't get into your mind that it has to be something horrific. It may be very horrific to the person that has it, but again, it could just be some other things. And just not been able to cope with it very well, or maybe ignored it for a long time, and then created a lot of behaviors and habits and attitudes and mindsets that ultimately leads to PTSD. So go ahead, Josh. Continue on.
Oh yeah, I'm glad you clarified that, because I think one of the things that I had prior to finding out I had PTSD is in my head, it was like stuff that was even more than what I went through in Iraq. Like, you literally had to have somebody standing there, you know, have a gun to their head and you witness the execution or something. Like, I thought it had to be like the worst thing on the planet for you to get PTSD. And just in my sessions and everything, found out that it really is so broad that it can be so many different things that affect different people in different ways. But I think
I also tell people handle it, because that story you gave an example of someone's head blowing off in front of you. So I had a gentleman in my recovery house who that happened to. He wronged a drug dealer. The drug dealer got him and his girlfriend, and the drug dealer blew his girlfriend's face up in front of him, said, you think you ever mess with me again? And, of course, the girlfriend died and all this stuff. And he would say, well, I didn't have PTSD, but what he did is he got into gambling and he got into addiction even deeper and stuff. So his argument, well, I didn't have PTSD. No, he just turned around and be a addictive gambler and deeper into drug addiction. So without coping with some of those things, quote, you may not think you have PTSD, but you have the behavior that's making it so you can deal with it, and you probably do have PTSD. So,
and I love how you touched on that behavior, because I did not have a clue that I had PTSD. The only thing I ever knew is that I had thoughts and memories that bothered me and that wouldn't leave me alone. And the thing that got me to finally seek help is I started having behavioral problems, and it was something not normal for me. And so I was like, something's going on, and I reached out and sought help. And in that, I was told I had PTSD, and I was shocked, to be honest, because I reserve that for people way worse off than me.
And I was shocked,
so
when
was
I heard you had PTSD.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
My son Josh doesn't. What is this? This has got to be fake, phony. Something's not right, because Josh is not going to. He had me as a dad. PTSD, it should be, from when I was a dad, not just out of the military. But maybe, I don't know, we haven't talked about this. Maybe some stuff, even as growing up, maybe that is some triggers in there. We'll find out. I don't know if I want to find this out or not, but this opened up that can of worms if we have to. But when you found out you had PTSD, how long was it after the military? And was it specifically mainly experienced in the military, or was it past stuff and it all kind of tied in?
Yeah, so it was, gosh, it was, so I started having problems way before getting out. I started having issues after my first deployment. I did not realize that it was PTSD. I found out years later, and I found out almost a year after I'd been out of the Marine Corps is when I went in and ended up finding out. I had had issues with thoughts and memories and stuff from my deployments that used to kind of bother me, and that even started while I was still in. And when I was in Japan, that's when my last year in, that's when stuff started to really bug me, and I just thought it was just, you know, memories and stuff that were just bugging me, and didn't have a clue what it was really called. And,
so is there a difference? Is there a difference between just having some experience in PTSD?
Yeah, there is. So, I mean, you can have, you know, you can think about things that, you know, are bothersome from your life or hurtful or something like that. But there's a difference between thinking about something and having something that constantly comes back and into your head, and it basically kind of takes control of you, so to speak, and you basically are at the will and mercy of these thoughts. And, you know, you might have certain things that come up, like nightmares, or there's experiences. I remember being in a parking lot one time, and this is a couple of years after getting out, and somebody set off a firework in the middle of winter, and I wasn't expecting a firework in the middle of winter, and I dove on the ground, and I really thought that I had a rocket being fired at me again. And I dove on the ground and was waiting for explosion when it realized when I hit the ground, it was obviously painful, And that pain jarred me and made me realize, oh, I'm in, the back of a Safeway parking lot in America. There's no rockets being fired at me.
So we hear that story a lot. So, I mean, we hear that story a lot of, that's, I guess, one of the most common stories we hear of anybody being in any kind of a battle is they hear the backfire of a car engine, that it can make them think that does it. Now, when I hear those stories at first, I look and say, now, come on, really? And so you hear something and it sounds like an explosion, but you know it's not. It's no big deal. Get over it. That's kind of been my mindset. I think that you probably at first had that mindset. I just need to get over it. Is that accurate or not?
That's how I was before going through a lot of therapy. And I was probably the worst critic of myself because there wasn't a whole lot that used to bother me. Pretty tough at things. And when I realized that I was having problems and they told me that I had PTSD, I was kind of in denial at first. And I thought, there's no way I have PTSD. I'm too dang tough for that. And then I tried
only
to
weak people
tell myself
it.
That I was that way. And I was mad at me. And you're weak if you have PTSD and there's no way I'm weak. And I beat myself up a lot because I'm like telling myself, why are you acting so weak? Just get yourself out of this. And it took me a while to realize this: you're not weak, for one. It takes strength to get help, to ask for help. And two, it's an actual medical disorder. It's something that's legit. And it's not just like, you pop an aspirin and you're okay.
So you said, you made a comment, you're not weak, you're actually strong because it's strong to get help. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Somebody's listening and maybe, they don't have to have PTSD, but they're dealing with a lot of different stuff. They need counseling, okay? Whether they have PTSD or not, maybe they're depressed or they're very anxious and they're saying, well, I'm strong, I'm not going to alcohol or drugs, and I'm just biting the bullet, I'm going through this, and I don't believe God makes us to have to bite the bullet when we don't have to, okay? If you can get help, that's better than pulling up the bootstraps, cinching the belt, and biting the bullet for the rest of your life and being miserable when you can get help. So why don't you just talk about that, because when we had talked before, Marines don't get help. So, how many guys do you think are dealing with PTSD and they're not getting help because it is weak? Just cover that whole concept of somebody actually getting help because it's their...
And I think it pertains to not just PTSD, but like you were talking about alcoholism, it could pertain to, you're struggling with anything. The concept to me is if you're having problems with something, anything, gambling, it could be literally anything. If you're having problems with anything, it takes strength for you to admit you can't do it on your own and you need help. And a lot of times you might think, well, I can do this by myself, but then ask yourself, how long have you told yourself that? And if it's more than just a couple weeks, then it's probably something that will go on for a couple years. And I know there's got to be some people that have been dealing with things for several years and thinking, I can just deal with this. I've dealt with it for this many years. Well, if it's something that's continuously been a problem for you for years, you're not dealing with it properly.
Ask yourself, why would you why keep going through the misery of that, right?
Why be miserable?
with me for years and years working with people with addictions, I mean, I could tell 10,000 stories. Anybody that's had any family member or friend that's been involved in addiction is, I could quit any time. When I'm ready to quit, I'll do it. And what that person isn't telling you is secretly they probably have tried to quit hundreds of times and you don't even know about it. And they're not going to admit that they it never worked for them. And then AA, the first step of AA is acknowledge that you're powerless over whatever it is. You don't have control over it. And your life has become unmanageable. And so here's the key is some, and I think me and you with our kind of personalities, we're the type that it might be out of control, but we think we can manage it. And we would argue, I am managing
it.
Do you know how
you
bad
think
it could
are.
Be? If I wasn't managing this, it would be 10,000 times worse, right? Isn't that our mindset that we have is, I am managing it. If If I'm drinking a fifth a day, if I wasn't managing,
I'm not drinking an entire liquor store. I'm only drinking 10 bottles.
Right? Isn't that kind of the mindset that can be there? So now, if we're talking about PTSD and we talk about your experience, so you can manage it. You manage it. So you hear a firecracker go off, you drop to the ground, you realize it wasn't a missile going by. You get up and you went back and went shopping or whatever. So obviously you were semi-managing it, and would you say that's part of the problem, is that semi-management stuff makes you think you're okay?
It does, and especially for people that are, I hate to say this, but kind of have a bullheaded, strong-willed personality, you kind of lie to yourself, and you kind of lessen some of the effects or things that you're going through and the problems, because if you don't make it seem as bad as it is, then that means you're really working on it, right? You're actually, managing like you're talking about. And so that was probably the worst thing for me, is the fact that I thought I was okay, and that, whatever these issues are, I can deal with it. I'm not, out there trying to shoot up, a mall or something like that. I'm not a crazy guy. I can do this. And then you find out that, you're not as tough and strong as you think you are, because mentally you're weak enough to the point, and then not weakness in a bad way, but weak enough to where you can't handle a certain situation. And so your body, your brain does something to try to protect yourself. And that's what basically the PTSD is from your body trying to protect itself. And so, like, going back, asking for help, it takes strength. It takes you the ability to say, hey, I can't do all this on my own. I need help. And getting help is actually a sign of being smart, because, it's no different than if your car breaks down and you don't know anything about a car, and you go, well, I'm just going to fix it, and you just take a wrench and throw it at the engine, it's not going to fix it. You need to get somebody that's experienced, that's either gone through it, or someone that knows how to help people that are in it, to actually get that help to get the so-called fix that, on the engine or something like that. But it's no different than with PTSD.
What actually got you? Well, first off, you didn't go in and say, "Hey, I got PTSD, fix me." What got you to what literally was the
breaking point, so to speak, for me.
Yeah.
So I spent a year while on active duty drinking a lot. And, Marines, everybody thinks Marines drink a ton. A lot of Marines do. But I was to the point I was drinking a fifth on every Saturday and a fifth on Sunday to kind of blank my mind out because of the thoughts and the memories.
Now, this was – and when was this? What time frame?
This was actually when I was in Japan. After the second deployment, I ended up going to Japan to get stationed there. And so after both deployments in Japan, I started really having a lot of problems with my memories and being plugged by a lot of stuff that I saw and did and everything. And so I started realizing if I could just get the thoughts out of my head, I'd be okay. And so I turned to using alcohol, because obviously you drink a fifth, you're not going to remember much. So I started masking the problems, the things that were causing problems for me. And then when I came back so-called stateside and came back into civilian life, I had things that were just, I knew were a little odd. Like when I was driving down the road, if there was a piece of trash in the road, I couldn't drive over it. I had to drive around it, even if it meant I had to go in the opposite lane or drive off the side of the road or whatever. I would not drive over a piece of trash.
That's got to be strange.
Potential IED that could blow your vehicle up. And I knew that just because they do that in Iraq doesn't mean it's done here. And I knew that it wasn't. But the emotion is so raw and real, you can't deny it.
So it would be that you know that it's a piece of trash.
Oh, no doubt in my mind, but it mentally I know that. But
right.
Emotionally,
it's like not,
everything within my body tells me it could be, And I'm not going to risk dying over, you know, an argument in my head. I am just going to go around it. And after going around it, you know, I'm fine with that because, you know, whatever. But if somebody else is in the car, you know, and they're like, "What? Why the hell did you do that?" kind of thing. It was almost embarrassing. And
yeah, so just talk about a little bit about that, because we were talking about if you have a family member that has certain behavior or a friend or whatever, and you're not quite understanding it. So if I was in the car and you did that, I would probably say, "What in the world are you doing?" And what would be your response?
You do a great coping mechanism that is probably not healthy, but it's called lying. And you'd say, "Well, you never know. You know, that bag of trash could have nails in it, or that, you know, McDonald's bag, some punk could have thrown some poop in there or something, and I don't want that on my car." You know, you make up lies.
And then with your personality, you would find humor, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you just make, you know, I saw a French fry sticking out, and there's a squirrel that ran out and tried to get the French fry, so I was just missing the squirrel. You know, I mean, you try to make up something.
Or I just wanted to scare you, and that did a good job, didn't I? Or whatever.
Yeah. You know, just throw something out there to deflect and make them forget,
and
like the whole thing.
Part of that is because you realize how stupid that looks. I mean, is that?
It's because I could realize that it's not normal, and it's just like I realized it's not normal to dive on the ground. I mean, that's why afterwards you get up and you look around and you do that kind of like that thing when, you know, you're walking down the street or something and you tripped
right
on your foot or something stupid. And you look around as you brush yourself off, and you do that look of shame where you're like, "I hope nobody saw me." And then if you make contact with somebody's eyes that saw you, you have the sheepish, stupid grin on your face, like,
right.
You know, you
when
try
it really
to brush it off.
Doesn't matter. Everybody,
it doesn't.
Everybody trips, right? You know,
yep.
It's all the different things that we feel shame and mean about. So you're saying it's the same thing. The difference is the seriousness of the event for you.
Yeah. And it's real. It's something that I still honestly struggle with to this day, and I still get counseling to this day for some of the things that I deal with PTSD. The one thing I've always described is mentally, logically, everything within me knows the threat's not there. There's nothing there that can hurt me. There's nothing I need to be on guard for, but every ounce of my inner being emotionally feels like that's an absolute lie, that there is possible harm, there is possible danger. And so because the feeling is so raw and so real, it overrides the logic. And you just can't just say, you can't let the logic win. It just, it doesn't happen. Because the emotion's so real, the feeling. And
right.
To give you a really good example, you know, living on my own after the Marine Corps, if I left my house at nighttime and I came back to my house, every single time that I came back to my house, I would have to pull out my gun and go clear my house. And I would just tell the, you know, the darkness, as I was turning on lights and going through and clearing, if you've seen a cop show, I was doing that. I was clearing my house, even to the point of opening the refrigerator, as stupid as that sounds, because somebody could hide in a refrigerator. And if I was really having a hard time, I would have to open up every single cupboard, anything that I thought even a tiny person could fit into, like somebody that's, you know, can, you know, what do you call it? A contortionist, yeah. I mean, it sounds retarded and stupid, even as I say it out loud. But because it felt so real, I always thought potentially there was somebody in there hiding that was going to try to kill me or hurt me, and I wouldn't let them do that. And I would yell through the house, "I've got a gun. If you're hiding, you better come out or I'm going to kill you."
Right.
And I did that for years. And so I can tell you know that's not normal. Like, logically, I know that's not normal. But it's so real, I can't deny it.
We're running out of time, dude, and we're going to go into the next interview here in a moment. You're listening to There Is Hope Radio. We've been talking with Joshua Dover, and he's been sharing about PTSD, what it is, and then sharing his own experiences. And we have to end this interview. We run out of time, but we'll get to another interview, and then we're going to talk about some of the solutions. So there is a solution. Some go to suicide to deal with that, and so we're going to talk a little bit about that also. So thank you for listening. We want you to know there is hope. This show is called There Is Hope, and I want you to know there is hope. And even though we haven't shared a lot of hope right now, in our next interview we're going to talk a lot more about hope, but I think one of the things that we can look at as hope is to get help. If you get help, you'll have some hope. If you are going through some things that is being just talked about, get some help, and that will give you hope right off the bat. Get a hold of a counselor. One of the things that you can do is if you just need someone to talk to, feel free to give us a call. And phone number is 1-866-WANT-GOD. That's 1-866-WANTGOD. That's 1-866-WANT-GOD. 24/7. We would love to be able to talk with you. But thank you, Josh, for the interview.
All right.
You've been listening to There Is Hope, and any advice or counsel given was provided for informational purposes only. For more information on what you've heard about today, click on thereishoperadio.org. That's thereishoperadio.org.